You're listening to the What Happens Now podcast with me, Mike Oldham. Everyone's been affected by the coronavirus outbreak in many different ways, but we don't want to focus on the negatives. So I'm going to do my best to bring a little bit of positivity your way by speaking to a different guest each week about the positives that might arise out of this whole situation. During lockdown, if you're anything like me, you might have been frantically trying to get yourself a delivery slot from one of the big supermarkets in the hope of getting some of the essentials in. Pretty high on my shopping list throughout lockdown has been beer. I've actually been trying hard to resist the urge to drink during the week. It's not always easy, especially now that the weather's getting a little bit better. But even so, I've been keen to remain stocked up in time for the weekend. Joining me today is someone who not only knows all about good beer, but can tell us about how its powers go far beyond tasting good and getting you a bit tipsy. So today's guest is the founder of Brewgooder, a company that is using the power of craft beer to bring clean water and life to thousands of people. Alan Mahan, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks very much for having me.
How are you doing? How's lockdown going for you?
Yeah, it's good and bad in equal measure. I think it's just a weird space. Time doesn't pass, yet time goes very, very quickly, and we're all in kind of a bit of a warp. I think, like you, I'm probably cracking open my beer a little earlier than I would normally do.
Yes.
Especially because in Scotland it's currently the summertime, the 1 week of summer that we're going to experience for the next few months, has just decided that it wants to be slap bang in the middle of the lockdown. But yeah, listen, there's challenges everywhere. It's just about finding routine and trying to, you know, keep seeing and entertained and in touch with people. And I feel like I've been doing that relatively well so far, but touch wood.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I mean, everybody that I've spoken to, both on and off this podcast, it seems to have kind of brought people together, and it kind of almost ironically brought people together when they can't be together.
Totally. I mean, I've actually spoken to friends from, you know, different time zones, from Canada, from New Zealand, that like I wouldn't have actually reached out to speak to again if this hadn't have been the case. Because I think you can get wrapped up in just doing, you know, things in life rather than actually using time to catch up with people. So I feel like whilst I haven't seen anybody in 3D, other than my flatmate, I think I've seen a lot of 2D people that I maybe should have checked in with a long time ago.
Yeah, totally. But that the guilt is gone now. It's quite nice. I mean, it's amazing. I've spoken to people who have told me that they're speaking to and catching up with even close family, like sisters, brothers, that they don't speak to more than maybe once a year because they live in other sides of the planet. I mean, my brother's over in Australia. We hardly ever catch up. And we have been doing so much more during lockdown. Is there anything that you've been doing kind of differently to keep your mind active or?
Yeah, kind of. So, I mean, I guess I do speak to my family quite a bit on the phone, but then just changes to FaceTime, even though I live in a different country from them and I don't often see them as often as I would like, maybe every couple of months. It's now like a call, you know, hearing someone's voice is not enough. And I quite like that. It's quite a charming thing because you do get to, you know, you hear that. I think one of the most pleasant noises you can hear at this moment in time is the whoop. Whenever on FaceTime, and I think that's always like a harbinger of like good things. Remind me of the question again.
You been doing anything to kind of keep yourself busy? I mean, people have been reading more, watching more TV, getting more fit. Have you been doing anything specific?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I'm as fit as I'll ever be at this moment in time. Doing a lot more exercise, a lot more improvisation. My flatmate actually laughed at me about maybe 4 or 5 months ago when I bought on Gumtree a spin bike, not a great quality one, but not a bad quality one either. And now it's like the thing that keeps me going and sane after I finish work, because I think whenever you get to the point like 5-6 o'clock and you're in the kitchen, and then the next step is to make food in the kitchen, you know, you actually need to snap out of it. So 45 minutes of like pretty intense exercise tends to do that for me. Wake up quite early. We are lucky enough, I don't know if any of your listeners know Edinburgh, but there's a big volcano, a big dormant volcano called Arthur's Seat, and it's genuinely like it's in our back garden. I mean, it's no more than 150-200 meters away. So we walk around there or walk up that every morning, and then before you know it, you know, you've actually done quite a lot with your day. Me and my family got on really, really well. We've, you know, pretty much completed Call of Duty to everything. We're trying to find ways to keep it interesting. And then I think the last thing, you know, a lot of people I know are much more motivated than me from a self-development point of view. I've tried like to learn new things. So some of them are learning keyboards, some of them are learning, you know, languages and stuff like that. I am currently trying to make the perfect sourdough bread. I've made three and they keep getting better and better each time. But like that thing's like a full-time job. I mean, I used to think, why does sourdough breads and artisan bakeries cost £4? But now I kind of realize that you need to pay attention to that thing.
Yeah, you need to put some love into it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how I've kind of been filling my days.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I was speaking to a friend earlier today, actually, who was saying he'd had advice from someone to literally, he's working at home, but he was told, go out and do a commute. Like, even if it's just a 15-minute walk, get up in the morning, go around the block and come back, and you feel just a little bit more prepared for your totally. Day. It sounds like good advice.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I actually did that for the first week of the lockdown. I used to walk to my office and back in the morning or at some point, mid-morning or whatever. And then I kind of increasingly felt guilty as I was the only one. I mean, I wasn't going speaking to anybody, I wasn't going into the office or whatever, but I was kind of increasingly feeling a little bit guilty about that. So we started to vary it up a bit, walking around the Holyrood Park and Arthur Seat. But yeah, I just think we need something to like begin or end our work days. If we're fortunate enough to be able to, you know, work from home, I want to stress above all that I feel extremely privileged from the fact that I can just not go to the office and work. For a lot of people, that's not the case, for various different reasons. But I feel like if you do have that privilege, that one of the big things is to take care not to have it take over everything, so that you're not just waking up, in my case, going to the kitchen table and working. And then cooking and then, you know, cleaning, and then before you know it, you go into watch Netflix and all you want to do is go to sleep to get up again.
Well, that's it. I think the other thing is that we're prone to distraction. And if you're just doing everything in one spot, it's so easy for everything to merge into one. And you could be kind of working and kind of doing other things.
Exactly.
But speaking of work, so I want to tell everybody about Brewgooder, but I think you're probably more qualified to do so. So what is Brewgooder? How did it start?
So Brewgooder is, so we're basically a craft beer brand that uses or tries to use beer as a powerful weapon for good. We use our profits for clean drinking water projects, and so far we've helped to fund 134 actually, different projects in Malawi specifically, and that's reached about 65,235 people, all through the sales of our flagship beer, which is Clean Water Lager. And that kind of came about kind of by accident, I guess. I was 22 years old. I was on a trip abroad doing some other international development work in Nepal, and I got sick from an unsafe water source. I kind of brushed it off. You know, 3 weeks into the trip, I was not feeling great. About 3 months into it, basically had to come home, and things just stopped working for me. As it got progressively worse, it coincided with the time that the project had finished and we were drinking really cheap whiskey in Kathmandu, and I just felt like it was probably bad spirits that were making me stuff like that. So I kind of like really kind of brushed it off because I felt like I was 22 and then invincible. But then when I came back, I got some tests done. They found out I had a parasite, and I got a prescription for metronidazole, which is like a super easy to get antibiotic, basically killed it. And then I looked into, you know, what problems around water access and diseases around water were, and I just found out like some really harrowing stuff. So 1 in 10 people across the world don't have safe water access. 800 children every day under 5 die from completely preventable diseases related to clean water, and that never really actually came into any sharp relief until I had 2 nieces of my own, and I'm sure any dads listening or whatever actually have a much closer connection as to what that would feel like. But you know, whenever, you know, if my 2 nieces grew up and managed to get past 5, you know, you wouldn't take any risk with your children's lives, and the thing that they need is that, which could put them at risk is kind of a is a surreal proposition. So if they were to get past five and they were a girl and they got to 12, 13 or whatever, and they were on their period, they would lose, you know, a week of school through self-absenteeism because they don't have access to sanitation. And anyone could tell you, if you started losing a quarter of your productive time, whether at school or in work, you know, you would end up falling very, very far behind, and you would have your life entirely limited by that. So I thought this would be an awesome thing for me to kind of get into as a area of work. And I applied for lots of different jobs, got rejected from every single one of them. And I was a bit lost. I was 23. I'd spent a year trying to get into this industry and nothing really worked. And then I started working for a really good friend of mine who had just started up a cafe in Edinburgh called Social Bite. And they had began really by allowing people to come in and pay forward a fiver for someone to have a coffee and a hot meal, a homeless person to mm-hmm. come and collect it, or someone who was vulnerable or in need to come and collect it. And I was blown away by that as a proposition, and I thought I would love to be able to help build this company. And by the time we left, I haven't really left, to be honest, but by the time I'd sort of done the vast bulk of my work, we went from one sandwich shop to seven across Scotland. We had the pleasure of welcoming, you know, George Clooney and Leonardo DiCaprio and Bill Clinton to events that we'd done and visiting the shops and, you know, cooking for them and stuff like that.
I remember that. I used to work around the corner from Social Bite in the new, just into the new town.
Yeah.
And I remember that, like, going out for lunch and there was a huge crowd. And I was like, what the hell's going on over there?
Yeah, no, that was a pretty surreal day, to be honest. Yeah, so he came, George Clooney and Leonardo DiCaprio came two separate years, but to do an event that we used to host called the Scottish Business Awards.
Yeah,
By the time, you know, 2017-18 rolled around, we were organising the world's biggest sort of sleepouts for to try and change the homelessness policy within Scotland. So we piloted a thing called Housing First, which meant that people would get wraparound support the moment they became homeless to then get them into a tenancy straight away, which is hugely successful in other countries. We built a village for 20 different people, or for 20 people down in Granton on the shore of Edinburgh. And we did some really cool stuff. We held sleepouts in New York City last year, in London, in Brisbane, in Hong Kong, all at the same time on the 9th of December. And I just loved the idea that you could use something as simple as, you know, ostensibly coffee and sandwiches to try and improve the world. And when I first got my paycheck back in, you know, 2013, I think it was, I noticed my, you know, outlook changed. I was getting regular money in. I was not spending a pound on, you know, tenants and the student union. I was spending fiver on boiled water cans in the off license, and coffee, you know, better coffee and all this sort of stuff. And I thought this would be an awesome type of route to get down in craft beer, because it was a growing category, but it was also something that my friends were very passionate about. So, you know, you would go out on the weekend and it would be like countdown, you know, you'd pick the different, you know, I'll have one from the top, one from the bottom.
Yeah.
Never really picked the same thing twice, and people were super into, oh, taste this, and oh, this is beautiful, and blah, blah, blah. And I just thought that it would be something that if you could harness it correctly, it could also be just as powerful or more powerful than the sandwich company. So I decided to aim it in the direction of clean water, because I didn't think the homelessness thing really worked, for various different reasons. And I decided, let's brew 1,000 bottles and sell it at the Edinburgh Festival in 2015 and see where we go. And that was a pretty chastening experience. I brewed 1,000 bottles of probably the worst beer that's ever been brewed. 300 of them exploded in my living room and bedroom and kitchen. And the ones that didn't, you know, taste like shit. So I had a pretty, you know, I knew that I couldn't build a business that had a purpose behind it if it didn't. You know, if
the product wasn't kind of right.
Exactly, and it couldn't be scaled quickly. So, you know, for me, if I was going to give this my all, I was 25 at the time, and I thought, well, there's no chance of me retiring at 65 the way the world's going at the minute. But I thought, you know, that gives me 40 years of a working career. Like, what would I aim that at? And for me, it was a million people with clean water. Could you change the lives of a million people? And if you did, you know, what would that do? So I just cheekily wrote off the guys at BrewDog and asked them, could they brew our first sort of batch of it? And they said yes. And then we crowdfunded that. And 4 years later, we are, we've got three core beers in the market at the minute. We've done, you know, up until the 20th of March, which is a landmark day for us for various different reasons, but we had planned 254 collaborations with different brewers in 24 different countries, and some of them managed to escape the lockdown into the real world. So probably at any one time there might be about 15 beers that anyone could have around the country, with different brewers from the likes of Tempest and Overtone up here in Scotland to Magic Rock, Four Pure, Beavertown, Cloudwater, Gypsy Hill, loads of different people who really got behind us. So it's been quite a cool journey up until recently. It's been a crazy period, because we had planned this big global gathering. We literally called it the global gathering, that was meant to take place from the 20th to the 22nd of March to be, you know, a celebration of our fourth birthday. And we could see the way the world was going mid-March. And that was kind of like a real squeaky bum time, if you like, because we were like, you just hope that it happens the week after. And that, I mean, looking back on it, it was an entirely selfish way to approach it. But we were like, just lockdown's going to happen, but kind of happen the week after.
So, yeah,
you know, we can make the most of, you know, we were projecting, I think, £500,000 of fundraising being done. And it got to, you know, 2 weeks before and Denmark closed down, and there were six brewers in Denmark that were taking part. And we basically said, listen, guys, don't worry, you're off the hook. They ended up releasing all their beers in a one or online, which was fantastic. But that was the moment where it was like, shit, this is just going to really grind to a halt here. And then a week before lockdown was official, we just said, listen, guys, go out and try and sell your beer as much as possible. Don't worry about the fundraising aspect of the collaborations. Just try and survive as businesses. So, and the weekend was going to kick off. It was the 20th, and I was watching Richie Sunak. I was in Fierce Bar in Edinburgh trying to grab some beers to go, and I was looking at Richie Sunak basically saying that, you know, the place is being shut down and everyone's allowed to go on furlough and stuff. And that was bittersweet, because I knew that we could retain some of the team that we had, for sure, although crazy situation, the furlough stuff, but I'll get on to that in a minute. But yeah, that kind of made, you know, the world was going to be different for us after that weekend in many different ways. And now that world isn't the same. So we've had to react to it in various different ways. You know, we saw a spike in our supermarket sales because everyone was panic buying. It must have been toilet roll and beer was what they were.
Yeah.
And then we've seen a massive switch to online, so much so that's actually now starting to outpace any of the other sales that we're doing. And we're still not, I don't think, as a business, doing that thing completely well. I still think there's more drinkers we could be introduced to. But the big thing for us came when lockdown actually happened, when we knew that this situation on the NHS would be really challenging. And we said, is there anything as a small beer company we could do to just do something nice for people? So one of the guys in the team, James, he had said, why don't we try and fund a round for the NHS? Like, why don't we basically say, if you will put the beer out at cost and deliver it at cost, and say, you know, buy a 4-pack and somebody else will come on the same website and register to have it delivered, who's a frontline NHS worker, and you can leave a little message of support, all for £6. And so far we've had 5,500 people come on and donate beers.
It's amazing.
Workers, and they're being sent out to them as we speak, and that's been brilliant, because you get to see the messages that people leave, and you know, if there's an overwhelming sense of gratitude for those workers. And you know, they could be frontline, they could be, you know, in administration or in IT, but I think everyone now is so thankful that we have something like the NHS to keep us safe. So that's been a particular highlight. But I guess, like other people who run businesses or you know, or just in jobs or just have families, you know, there's just a certain uncertainty that comes with this lockdown. But I think, like most people, we're just trying to survive it and get through, and hopefully we've done enough in this, you know, and a half or whatever it's been to try and make that a little bit better.
Well, it's such an amazing story. It makes me think of about a million different questions, but it's such an amazing story. And it's quite a unique story as well, because I feel like most businesses come from I don't know how to describe it really, but it's almost like the key priority for you putting this business together has never been this is how I'm going to make my fortune. And in terms of being a kind of entrepreneur or business owner or whatever you want to call it, that's almost quite unique. And I'm not saying that every entrepreneur sets out, right, how am I going to make millions? But there's just such a positive kind of focus of the business. And that must make it hugely rewarding to actually be a part of.
Totally. Like, listen, I don't think that people, you know, whether or not people set out to pursue money or not is something. I'm sure that the people who've invented stuff that's made everyone's lives easier or better or, you know, healthier or safer, have done so in the pursuit of money at the same time as bringing their ideas into the world. So I don't want to feel like we're you know, martyrs or we're, you know, anti-entrepreneurship.
No.
But for me, I honestly don't really care about, I mean, at this moment in time, I guess if I had a wife and a family, that would put it into sharper relief. But for me, it's always been about, if you do what you like to do, you'll be good at it. And if you're good at it, then stuff will come, whether that's quality of life or whether that's money or however you want to, you know, ultimately people have money to buy quality of life. And it just depends what your way of life is. I drive a Renault Clio, it's 10 years old. I'm sure that my quality of life for the 10 minutes I'm in the car would be better if it was a Mercedes, but I don't spend that much time in the car. So why would I care?
Yeah.
When I fill my house with plants that I look at, you know, all the time, or learn to do something, whatever. So I can get by, if you understand. On that.
Yeah, of course.
So that's one thing. I think from a social entrepreneurship point of view, I think fundamentally it's the best risk reward ratio that you can imagine, you know, dedicating a career to. So if it works out for you, then ultimately you make things happen for other people. And I think if it doesn't, then you'll probably learn a lot that you can apply in the private sector or for entrepreneurship or whatever. So I genuinely would encourage people to, if they want to start businesses, that they would be, you know, they would do worse than to start even a side project in social entrepreneurship, just to see what motivates you and what kind of unlock. But it's challenging. Like, we set the business up in a way where it's owned by a charity that gets money, that spends money, and the demand of that charity and the demand of the mission is to invest as much in that as possible, as opposed to you know, recirculating that within the company. So growth is a challenge. You know, there's craft beer is a very, very fast growing industry. Well, it's slowed down considerably in the past few while it's rationalizing, but at the start, these crowdfunding journeys where people have really, really taken off and grown enormously. But we don't have that option, at least yet. So there has been bits where, you know, you could say from a business point of view, it's a challenge, but it also makes us stand out. You know, people understand what we're about fundamentally, and I think that helps differentiate us versus other craft brewers. But I love, one of the things I love about our industry is that it is so collaborative. I mean, rarely in an industry with 254 companies who are ostensibly in competition with each other come together and to work on a project. So I feel kind of blessed in that way to be doing what I do in this industry.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. I've got a friend who is one of the co-founders of Fierce Beer up in Aberdeen. And they, I mean, Dave McCarty is his name. I don't know if you know Dave.
So there's wee Dave and big Dave. They tell me about
that. Exactly. Yeah, he's big Dave. So, and he came down here. We're based in southwest London, and he sent me a message saying we're going to be in Brewdog in Clapham Junction.
Yes.
And that, to me, I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean you're going to be there? Because that's their beer. You know what I mean? But it was a kind of tap takeover thing. And I hadn't even seen one of those before. But I thought that was great. I thought the fact that they're kind of supporting each other and helping out a smaller company, it's just a really positive thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we work with BrewDog. We work with Fuhrer in Bermondsey as well. And we've worked with brewers of all different sizes. We're trying to get a three-way collaboration with two, you know, relatively small brewers in Glasgow. Check my email halfway through this call. Make sure it's on track. But it's just amazing, and everyone's super passionate about what they're doing.
And what do you think currently? I know this is probably a difficult question to answer because we're still in lockdown or quarantine, whatever you want to call it. But do you see this being a positive thing for the industry and for you guys personally? Or do you think it's going to be largely challenging, or is there a balance of the two?
Listen, you know, forest fires create new life, and I'm sure stuff will happen after it. But ultimately, it's horrendous for a lot of craft brewers. I mean, I think a lot will struggle to survive it, and that's my big, us included. I think that's the big challenge, because, you know, your bread and butter is selling pints of good beer to people in pubs. And you can offset that in online and off trade and all that sort of stuff. But it actually is hugely challenging. I mean, I know that there's brewers who have just simply stopped production, and the longer it lasts, the more chance it is of being, you know, devastating for a lot of those brewers. When we come out the other end of it, I hope people have a renewed sense of the worth of a pint of beer, and more people buy local and buy better, and ultimately the long arc is what is it? There's a Martin Luther King thing, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards progress. So hopefully it's like that sort of thing, where eventually people realize what, you know, is valuable in life, and craft brewers benefit from that. But I think we're too in the middle of a crisis for our industry and other industries to know exactly what the future holds.
But yeah,
I hope it does. I hope it does end up all right.
What do you think has been the kind of highlights of the journey so far? Have you been, I mean, whether it could be travel, you know, to these places where you're helping people, or what are the kind of career highlights?
For that, like, I mean, I've been out 3 or 4 times to Malawi, and I tend to let my team go over and see the fruit of their work, because, you know, once you've seen a project, you know what project, I mean, unless they're really innovative or whatever, you know exactly how it works. And I don't like to go in into a community like a, you know, and just be like, here are some sort of saviors or whatever, and come back out of it. So I haven't been in a couple of years, and I'm due to go back to basically see what life's like on the ground. But one trip that we did have, we went to a village called Bandani, and it was the first time borehole was being drilled for a project. And there was a guy came, he was, you know, quite elderly, and he sort of came over and said thanks in English, which he obviously, you know, didn't speak fluently. And that was quite emotional, because for me, that marked kind of like a turning point for that community. Ultimately, they had experienced his entire lifetime of living there without, you know, a safe, reliable water source. But then someone born the day after that would, in essence, you know, never have to experience that. So a very stark thing for me. So that was, you know, a particular highlight, I guess, although I feel weird calling it that. But I just love, like, I love my team. Like, they like every day, like, they work hard to do stuff to make what I want to happen, and they own it as much as I do. So it's extremely rewarding building a team of really talented people. But I just love stuff like, you know, you can't see it, but I've got a wall of collaboration cans. They're with brands that I just absolutely love and would never have imagined in a million years working with. You know, I've got Beavertown and Cloudwater and, you know, Ardbeg Whiskey and Magic Rock and Shindigger all up there. And these are like, you know, I'm fans of these guys. It's like getting to play football, you know, a 5-a-side game with Thierry Henry, you know what I mean? It's like, these are your heroes in essence.
Yeah.
And I think that when you stop and take a step back and realize that that's what you've brought into the world, and that is quite, you know, that's a highlight.
What about the beer? That kind of makes me think of the first beer that you collaborated. It was BrewDog that provided,
yeah,
right?
Water lager, yeah.
Did they just provide a beer, or did you have a recipe in mind, or how did that kind of come about?
We just developed it together. There's a really brilliant, he now works in for By the River in Newcastle, but there's a guy, Stephen Allerston, and we developed a recipe together. I said what I wanted it to taste like. He said how he could improve that, and then, yeah, we just developed it. I mean, I'm much more of a drinker than a brewer, but I have a lot of respect for someone who can say, describe to you what he wants a beer to taste like, and then, you know, later it tastes like it.
That's pretty special.
Yeah, exactly. So we did that, and, but, you know, whenever we do collaborate with brewers, I basically say, listen, guys, I'm not going to tell you what to do. Like, I wouldn't be here working with you if we didn't think that you would make a great beer. Just go and knock it out of the park. With our most recent beers, Moyo Juice and Chaluzi, both named after different things in Malawi. But you know, we actually sat down from scratch and worked up a recipe, and at least, you know, felt my way through the dark with some of the people in the team, and we've come up with two amazing beers. One's a session IPA, just really easy going beer, and then the other one's just a super juicy mango and passion fruit pale ale. They're both under 4%, so they're, you know, quite easy drinking and low ABV. And yeah, like there's much more to come. I want to make a beer like a Solero this summer. Yeah, just getting into it, and
I feel like we've missed a trick here. I should have asked you to send me some samples that we could have tried on the air. That would have been the smart thing to do.
But now you've just wrangled yourself some samples for us.
And I believe you've got one called Stay in the Hoose Juice now.
Yeah, well, it's like rebranded, so it's like, okay, it's digital only, but it's basically, you know, we just thought it would be it's a bit of fun. Don't go out and try and get taps off. We're like, just stay in the house and drink it, and we'll send it to your door for free.
It's making me think of Edinburgh, things like Taps Off in the summer as well. What about the festival? It's not happening this year.
No, it's not. Yeah, Edinburgh's a ghost town. It should start to be busying up relatively soon, and that's not going to happen. And I think in August in Edinburgh, about the festival, is when you know it's not going to be normal for a while.
Yeah.
But I just can't imagine that. I mean, I think the city quadruples in size.
They say more than a million people come in. But
Edinburgh's not a big city, so it's all condensed. And the pedestrianised areas around the old town. And it's crazy. And I think that'll be a weird, you know, weird moment when you walk down Princess Street or whatever, on your legislated one walk a day, and you don't see any people or like magic acts or, you know, magic acts, like street performers,
yeah,
anything, or somebody handing you a flyer for something. So yeah, that's going to be super, super weird.
It'll be interesting to see how, especially given that the festival is kind of the hub of creativity across the arts industry, interesting to see how all of the different, including yourselves, all the different companies use creativity. Because I mean, I can only imagine that a beer producer will want to sell beer to festival goers, and there's just going to have to be so many, you know, searching almost a bit desperately here for a positive. But it does give people a chance to do things a bit differently, whether that is a positive or not. But in the festival, there's just going to be a gaping hole in Edinburgh, so there is opportunity there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And it probably benefits the agile or smaller brewers to make a festival beer or whatever. So yeah, I think totally. We have plans to make beers that are specific to things in the summer for sure. Because people can't go on holidays, so can we bring a holiday to them in a can, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's about how nimble you are at reacting to things. But you know, the Edinburgh Festival has been criticised heavily for not ever having a Scottish brewer in their main event spaces. But, you know, bars and restaurants make all their money in that month, and you know can ride out the leaner winter months. So yeah, it's gonna be crazy, man. It's just, I can't even imagine it. It kind of freaks me out to even think.
I know.
But yeah, like you say, the creativity then has to kick into overdrive, and what you just need to do is quickly create something, put it out there. If it doesn't work, you move on and you sort of iterate your way to something that's really positive. But yeah, maybe there's going to be an online festival, who knows, and people will be paying a fiver to watch somebody do a show over Zoom.
Well, I'm sure they can. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, because we have a flat in Edinburgh, I remember a couple of years ago a performer asking if they could use our flat as a venue. And it's like a tiny two-bedroom flat in the old town. But they wanted to do this kind of immersive. So if you can do that, then maybe you can do it on Zoom as well.
Yeah, there's definitely, you could have that sort of Zoom call feels.
Tough gig doing comedy over Zoom, though, because if you don't get anything back, if everyone's on mute, then that's pretty brutal.
I did a talk, when was it, Tuesday afternoon, and I was doing it to, like, maybe, I don't know, a company, a whiskey company, like 6 or 7 people, and it was weird because I've done talks and events for like 2,000 people, like, you know, 15-minute, half an hour, whatever it is, and there's something so weird about not being able to look your audience in the eye or scan the audience that makes it, like, so much more nerve-wracking. And you kind of just end up kind of fumbling a little bit.
Well, it kind of feels, I know exactly what you mean, it kind of feels like you're talking to nobody.
Yeah.
It feels like if you stopped, it wouldn't really matter, but they are there, it's just you can't see them. It's very strange.
Totally. So, yeah. But I'm sure they'll get the, what do you call it, like the canned laughter tracks back. And
just, yes, exactly.
Everyone's meant to laugh, they'll just press the button.
Well, Alan, I really appreciate your time. I've got a couple of final questions for you to wrap up. First of all, what do you miss most from normal everyday life?
I'm absolutely hankering for a boozer, like just to sit and have a pint. Like, I just want to go and have a belly best, like not even like a particularly craft beer. I just want to have a belly best. I want to go and sit outside and drink it from a pint glass. I want to go and have a takeaway coffee. And I want to see my mates again, you know? I just want to see them, touch them. I feel like I'll be on like some sort of under the influence the next time I see them, just to be all huggy and kissy and I love you the best. So I can't wait to see that. And then I can't wait to see my family again. They were supposed to come over the weekend before lockdown and spend a bit of time in Edinburgh, which means that I probably wouldn't have seen them for about 5 or 6 months.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. My other question is very similar, and you've kind of already answered it, but first thing that you want to do?
First thing I want to do is definitely get everyone to, there's a hopefully it happens within a reasonable time frame and it's a nice day, because I would love to just go and have a buffalo chicken burger from the Buffalo Truck in the Pitt Market in Edinburgh. Big shout out to those guys. I hope they make it through this, but it's the nicest buffalo chicken burger in the world, and just sitting outside with everybody, they can have their chats and I can just get deeply immersed in chicken burger. I think that's what I would do.
Great stuff. Thank you very much again, Al. Really appreciate it.
Nice one. You're a legend. Take care.
Thank you very much for listening to the What Happens Now podcast. The coronavirus outbreak affected us all, and it was responsible for me losing my brand new job as an event director back in March. Because of the date I started, I wasn't eligible to be furloughed, so it really was a slap in the face for me. The positive being that it led to the start of this podcast. I really hope you've enjoyed listening, and if you have, then please visit my GoFundMe page, where you can donate and help support the podcast's future, and also support the NHS. 25% of your donation will go to the NHS Charities Together, which helps them continue to provide £1 million a day to the NHS. Just visit gofundme.com and search for What Happens Now podcast. Thank you.